You are listening to the INCJ podcast, conversations about international criminal justice.
Okay, I think we might get started. People are still being admitted to the Zoom call, but I think at this stage it would be no harm to start the ball rolling. So depending on where you are right now, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening to everybody. You're all very welcome. My name is Vivian Geeran. I'm the former director of the Irish Probation Service. And it's a pleasure to be chairing today's webinar on implementation science and its application in criminal justice, and particularly in probation, parole, as well as custodial operations. Thank you all for joining us from what I'm sure is a wide range of jurisdictions, organisations and professional backgrounds. So implementation science, as you're probably all well aware, asks a deceptively simple question. How do we move from knowing what works to actually making it work in practice? In probation and parole and corrections more widely, that's a particularly challenging and important question. We have, at this stage, no shortage of research, promising interventions or policy ambitions. And the challenge really is translating those into everyday operational practice across different teams, organizational cultures, resource constraints, and the realities of working with people whose lives are often complex and unpredictable. So today's roundtable is a follow-on discussion from what we've called the European and American context discussions that took place in two earlier webinars, the first one in April and the second one earlier this month. So just by way of a very brief recap on the two earlier events, the first took place on the 21st of April, and the goal on that day was to bring together perspectives from across Europe to examine how change is achieved, sustained, and evaluated in probation systems in Europe. Professor Ion Dernescu, who's with us again today, established the conceptual foundation, emphasizing that training alone does not produce change and drawing on comparative examples. He considered how through coaching, supervision and refresher learning and evaluation, that knowledge can become practice rather than remaining abstract. We moved on then to hear from Michelle Richardson of the Irish Probation Service, who described the development of the Irish probation framework as an offender supervision process shaped through consultation with staff and reflection on existing practice, and how the Irish service is seeking to bring coherence to diverse practice approaches by emphasising quality staff supervision, engagement with clients and consistency in professional standards. And then we heard from Dr. Daniela Merhar-Prelic, director of the Slovenian Probation Service, who told us about her probation system, which is still in the early stages of formation, and highlighted the importance of building organizational capacity from the outset. The second event in this series of three on implementation practice took place on the 9th of June and considered an American perspective on implementation science. So that webinar was chaired by Michael Nail, Commissioner of the Georgia Department of Community Supervision. And Michael was joined by Scott Maurer, Dr. Nick Powell, Dr. Francis Chen, and Dr. Tanya Van Dienst, some of whom are with us here again today. They considered the central question of how, once criminal justice agencies have evidence about what works, how do they make that evidence work in practice, considering factors additional to those discussed at the April event. And while criminal justice systems have made considerable progress in identifying evidence-based practices, by far the harder challenge is operational, in the sense that research does not implement itself. Some of the other issues emerging from the discussion on the 9th of June were made in the context of the scale, for example, the scale issue, and specifically Georgia's very large community supervision system with around 200,000 people under felony probation or parole supervision. And one of the dangers that was identified at that event was assuming that evidence-based practice is simply a matter of plug and play, which it is clearly not. The discussion also considered the context of frontline delivery and how practice models ultimately depend on the officers who have to use them in everyday supervision. In that respect, we must take account of officer stress, role conflict, organizational demands, and practical conditions under which staff work. We also need to consider organizational stressors that can realistically be changed, including the quality of supervisory support. Some of these themes, as well as some of them being different from what we had discussed in April, some of them did clearly overlap with over the two events. The discussion in June concluded that really strategy and research are inseparable, and in order to be flexible and adaptable, strategic plans should be written in pencil, not pen, was the phrase used. Also, that leaders must be willing to say no when an idea does not fit current priorities or the timing is not right. And additionally, as Tanya described that day, implementation is a multi-level process, and in order to secure buy-in from frontline staff, leaders must explain the why from the outset. So today's discussion is about bridging the gap between knowing what we know works and actually delivering that in practice for effective outcomes. And while the earlier events took a particular focus, we're hoping that today's discussion will open things up, give us a chance to tease out the relevant issues a bit more. Maybe some of the panelists today have had additional thinking regarding those issues since the previous events, and we might get to explore those hopefully in more detail. So we'll be exploring how implementation science can help us understand not only what to implement, but how to implement it effectively, sustainably, and at scale. And that includes thinking about leadership, organizational readiness, staff engagement, fidelity and adaptation, data and continuous learning, and ultimately how these influence outcomes for people under supervision and the communities that we serve. So we're very fortunate today, as I said, to have an excellent panel of contributors who bring expertise from research, policy, and operational practice. And once again, we are delighted to be joined by Professor Ion Dernescu of the University of Bucharest in Romania, Dr. Nick Powell, Director of Research and Strategic Planning at Georgia Department of Community Supervision, Dr. Francis Chen, Georgia State University, Dr. Tanya Van Dienst of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And we're also joined today by Ms. Lena Canty of the Learning and Organizational Development Unit at the Irish Probation Service. So I want to thank all our panelists who will share insights into the frameworks, methods, and lessons that can help organizations navigate the often challenging journey from evidence to implementation. Briefly, what's going to happen today is when I finish now on my introduction, very shortly, I'll be inviting the panelists to come in and introduce themselves and say a little bit about their take on implementation science. And we'll be running the event over the next 90 minutes max. And hopefully between now and then, we will have a very fruitful and engaging discussion. So without any further ado, I'm going to ask each panelist to say a very brief hello. I'm talking about just about a minute each. And over the course of the afternoon, if and as needs be, I'm going to wave the timing stick just so that we can ensure that everybody gets to say what they need to say. So I'll just ask people as I see them randomly on the screen to say a very brief hello, introduce themselves, and say maybe what first got them interested in or involved in implementation science in their area. So Tanya, you're the first person I see on my screen. Would you like to come in?
I can. Thank you. So hi, everyone. Tanya Van Dienst. I'm a research professor at, as Vivian said, UNC Chapel Hill School of Social Work. And I came to implementation science probably about 15 to 18 years ago when I was working in community mental health. And most of the work that I did was kind of cross-systems work with criminal justice system, mental health system. And as you all know, those are complex multi-level system. So, you know, implementing any kind of intervention was messy. And, you know, I was looking to kind of frameworks and guidance on how to consider, you know, factors related to implementation in both kinds of systems, so mental health and criminal justice systems. So that's when it first happened. And I took that with me as I continue to do work primarily within probation and mental health at that intersection. And that's what I continue to do today.
Thank you very much, Tanya. Very succinct. Francis, you're the next on my screen. Would you like to say hello and briefly how you got involved in implementation?
Yeah, of course. Thank you. So my name is Francis Chan. I'm an associate professor at the Criminal Justice and Criminology at Georgia State University. So my path to implementation science is a little bit indirect. I train as a biosocial criminologist. And I study like stress physiology and behavior, kind of work with active offenders and also with children with externalizing problems. So I don't really do much with the agency early on in my training. It's kind of like just stumble upon it when I start the position here. And I think the agency here, like the Department of Community Supervision, they are very welcoming with different kind of research approach. As you can see, because my approach is very different. It's more biosocial. The kind of framework, but then we kind of hit it off, and then they start to work on something about what make it work. And for me, I mostly focus on the human factor, so the psychology and also the biology side of the person who is delivering those mechanisms. So I think that sums up what I kind of how I get into it. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Francis. Already from Tanya and Francis, I see it's really interesting that you've come from different areas completely than the criminal justice system, but ended up within the criminal justice system, which has all sorts of interesting aspects to it. Jan, how about you?
Yeah, hello, everybody. It's so great to be here and to see so many familiar faces and familiar names. Amazing. I'm a professor at the University of Bucharest, Romania, and I come across again lately, let's say, with the implementation science when delivering training on core correctional skills. Just being concerned with how to make this training as effective as possible, I rediscovered the implementation science and implemented some of its principles in different countries, just to make sure that actually the training is transferred to practice. And not only that, but also avoiding drifting away from the skills and how they should be practiced in a kind of real world. So this is how I rediscovered, let's say, the implementation science. And I'm a big fan of this science, if I may say that. Thank you.
And thank you, Jan. Again, really interesting aspects of your journey that I hope we'll get into a little bit more of later. Lena, would you like to come in and say hi and how you came to or involved?
Thanks a lot, Vivian. Hi, everybody. It's great to be on, and thanks, Vivian, for inviting us to participate. So my name is Lena Canty, and I'm a senior probation officer with the Irish Probation Service, and I'm part of the learning and organisational development team. So we're involved a lot in staff training and staff development. So my first introduction really to implementation science was about 2.5 years ago, when the service, I suppose, embarked on implementing a bespoke framework for supervision framework in across the Irish Probation Service, known as the Irish Probation Framework. So the service, I suppose, really wanted to ensure that we went about that in the best possible way and with the best chances of success. So we engaged, I suppose, an implementation science expert. So as a training and development team, we would have had a number of consultations with this expert, Eleanor McClory, around how best to go about implementing the framework. So that was really, I suppose, my first introduction. I hadn't really any experience or knowledge of implementation science prior to that, but I'm certainly a convert to the importance of it in terms of particularly around any kind of organisational change or change that you're trying to bring into a system. I think it's really, really important. So so that's my background to implementation science.
Excellent. Thanks very much, Lena. And finally, Nick.
Hi, Vivian. Hi, everyone else. So for me, it's a little bit different. So I actually came up through the ranks as a probation officer, and specifically as a specialized mental health supervision officer, working on a caseload of exclusively people with mental health needs, and trying to, you know, problem solve, lengthen the resources, and improve outcomes. And one thing I saw as an officer and as I progressed through my career as an assistant chief was like just how much officers were tasked with doing. And that, you know, we can have the best ideas in the world, the best research in the world, but like the crux of implementation ultimately rests on those officers. And, you know, and then seeing some of the, you know, different circumstances that people on probation and parole are dealing with, you know, it led me to study sociology at the university level. And I did my dissertation on officer well-being, some of those individual factors that like Francis was talking about, and learned that through my studies that, you know, the more people with mental health needs on an officer's caseload, the more, you know, the more likely they were to experience, you know, emotional exhaustion, organizational stress, and depressive symptoms themselves. So, you know, taking that information and then doing my career and moving into strategic planning and research for the Georgia Department of Community Supervision, we started learning that, you know, people in mental health supervision weren't faring so well. And specialized mental health supervision, you know, what's considered a best practice, wasn't doing anything to improve outcomes. So I actually partnered with Tanya Van Danza from UNC, who was the first one you called on, Vivian. And she was actually the one who introduced me to implementation science. And so we stopped thinking about like, okay, specialized mental health supervision is not working, so let's throw it out. We stepped back, we looked at the research, like the research I did in my dissertation on officer well-being, and started having conversations about like, okay, how can we better position the officers? What implementation strategies can we undertake so that they're better positioned to be able to implement that evidence-based practice, implement that specialized mental health supervision that we're asking them to implement. So that's where that was kind of a big, a pivotal moment for me when we started working from. So me and Tanya, and I'm sure it'll come up more, you know, we brought in a clinical case consult, a therapist for the officers, not people on supervision, with the idea of if we can take better care of our officers, they'll take better care of the services. So we implemented an implementation strategy so the specialized mental supervision could take root as it was designed.
Really interesting again, Nick. A whole lot of stuff. I was going to start recapping on some of those points, but I won't because I'll just let the conversation evolve maybe a little bit. And maybe, Nick, then if I can stick with you for the next question, which I was going to put to the panelists, which is about it often strikes me that when any of us talk about implementation, at one level, it seems to be obvious what needs to be done. We're all on the same page. And yet there is a certain leap to getting acceptance of what needs to be done and then doing it. So what would you say or do to convince a colleague or colleagues that implementation science was important for their practice, for improving their practice, for making their practice the best that it can be? And I'll come to the rest of the panelists on the same question.
Okay. Yeah, Vivian, one thing that I always say is that, you know, evidence-based practice is a verb, not a noun. It's not something we get to set and forget. It's not something that, you know, we found off of a shelf. It's something that we're constantly doing. And so that's why when Tanya introduced me to implementation science, you know, I kind of fell in love with it because it started recognizing implementing evidence-based practice as an ongoing effort. Where up until that point, I feel like I was kind of trained or kind of just defaulted to thinking about it was all about the rollout, all about the launch. But implementation of an evidence-based practice is so much more than a go-live date. It's about constantly refining, making adaptations so that we're making sure that we're building capacity for our frontline staff to be able to implement these initiatives how they're intended. And that's how we're going to get the better outcomes, hopefully.
Okay, very good. Tanya, would you like to come in on that question as well? How you know, what would you say or do to convince a colleague or colleagues about the the importance and the value of implementation science for their practice.
Yeah, I would probably hold off on calling it implementation science just because I feel like, you know, it, in some ways it can become like, you know, the buzzword in some ways, but also it can sound really technical. You know, you've got implementation science research, you've got implementation science practice, and everything, you know, theories and frameworks, and it can get really cumbersome. And so I feel like what I like doing is, you know, kind of easing into that, but breaking it down a little bit and really just asking questions. I think every agency partner, and just for reference, you know, I work very closely, mostly with probation partners, but other types of agencies, and I come in as an external person, right? And so what I end up doing is just really asking a lot of questions about the context and kind of helping them think through, okay, so you want to implement this thing. Let's break down what that's going to look like. And then all sorts of questions come up. And I think every agency person has like a story of how the best laid plans didn't work out because this happened, or, you know, there was a transition in leadership or whatever it might be. And so I think I kind of ease into the topic that way and then probably talk about theories and frameworks, but not in a researchy kind of way, in much more practical way. And so we might think about like behavior change mechanisms would be like a technical way to say that, but it's really thinking through like, well, how do you change the capacity of someone? How do you, you know, how do you change, you know, someone's confidence in their ability to implement that? Well, that's all implementation science is behavior change theory, but we don't talk about it in that way. So I think my long answer made short is just like not making it too technical and trying to just really zero in on the practicality piece before bringing in this whole idea of implementation science.
Okay, great. Yeah. Again, a whole lot of stuff, a whole lot of points in what you've just said, Tanya. Just before I move on to the next panelist, can I just remind everybody, if you have questions or comments that you want to make, please do put them into the chat function and we'll deal with them at the appropriate time, certainly when I get to open up for a wider discussion. So please do put your comments. I'm sure a lot of people on the call have a lot of experience of their own perspectives on implementation, their own experiences of implementation maybe, or their own curiosities. And as Tanya has just said, their own questions that they have that they want to ask. Okay, can I come then to Lena, maybe? How would you approach that issue of what would you say or do to convince colleagues? I'm sure you have been and you are in the thick of that in the implementation of the Irish probation framework.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's probably picking up really on a couple of things that Nick and Tanya just said there. I think a really important thing that I suppose is really what we have learned from implementation science. So I think it's focusing on those real practical things that make, I suppose, something like that you're trying to implement to make meaning for people. And I think, like Nick said there, it's more than just a go live button. And I suppose one of the things that we've really learned is the importance of that kind of ongoing collaboration and consultation with staff. So, you know, we, I suppose, learned that through implementation science that it's really important that it's, you know, it's not just training and then give the people the manual and off you go and implement it. It's really important to bring people back and to hear their experience as they're implementing. So we established communities of practice in the probation service to really support staff, to give them a space to reflect on the changes that were being implemented, to reflect on what was, you know, the enablers and barriers to those changes. And they are things that we've really learned from implementation science. You know, one of the other things I think you mentioned as well, Vivian, is around the scale and pace. And that took us a bit of time to get our head around, really, in terms of, you know, the time that it can take to implement changes. So it was really important that we had, you know, an important kind of infrastructure around the the implementation, and also that we appreciated the time that it was going to take to implement some of these changes. So I think to convince people, it's really focusing on, we've seen those benefits in real time. You know, we've seen, I suppose, that taking a kind of scale and taking things in a phased approach to implementation has worked for us. And then also that ongoing kind of feedback loop with staff has really been critical, you know, really hearing from staff about, you know, what the benefits are, what additional maybe training or supports they need. So that's been really key. And all of that, I suppose, has come from implementation science. You know, so it's been a different way of doing things that we might have done in the past.
We're losing your audio at the minute, Lena.
Again, we would have trained people, given people a pack and a manual, and then maybe not followed up. So that's a change for us.
Okay, thanks for that, Lena. Just towards the end of your contribution there, I was certainly losing some of your audio.
My internet is giving me trouble. Probably
it's unstable. Is it? It sometimes helps if when you're talking, it might help if you turn off your camera as well. I can hear you perfectly now, but just in future contributions, it might just
perfect.
Help.
Perfect. I'll do that. Thanks, Vivian.
Do that. Okay. Thanks very much, Lena. Francis, can I come to you in relation to convincing people? What would you say or do regarding convincing colleagues that implementation science was important?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think I have very similar thoughts as Tanya, what she was saying, because I think I also have another layer of reason why I agree with her completely about not to really put out the word implementation science just at the get-go. One layer I have is I'm not the authority for that, so I don't feel as confident to just convince them about that science. Instead, I would normally, if I were to try to convince someone, I will focus more on some small concepts. And specifically, I think the very important thing for the field agents will be things about fidelity. It's kind of like, if you're implementing it, how do you know that it's actually working? Are they really doing what they are doing? So I think that will be something really important to assess. And I think I was reading the comments. I think it looped back to what Simon was talking about in the chat box there. A lot of time when we implement, we really need to make it clear, what do we try to get at? So I think Nick and I, we are actually currently working on a proposal. We are trying to basically do a hybrid trial to basically roll out something, some tool. But then at the same time, we want to have that implementation science part of it on it to know and assess what is the uptake, what is adoption, and all those stuff, and what's the challenge that involved in it. So I think to convince someone to really get on board with implementation science, there are two phases that we have to get on. One will be the design phase. Like Nick mentioned, like in our panel earlier this month, you cannot really plug and go. So that means whatever that you want to implement, they'll have to go through a phase that needs to be designed for your agency. So for us, we are working on something that's more like a user-centered design. So given that the tool we are trying to put out is for the officer, so we want to incorporate officer at the beginning, not after we decided we're going to do it. We want to incorporate them, get all the feedback, how they think that this should work, what kind of thing that they want beyond just training. It's actually designed into the tool itself. Then by the time that we get to roll out, that part is not a success because we don't really know how the uptake will be, how, even though they might be on board at the beginning, like, is it really working when you actually roll it out? So you will have to do those implementation evaluation. So I think to me, to convince them working is you have to focus on the person, what they need in order to make it a success. And the best way to do it is incorporate them at the early design phase of it. So that by the time you get to the implementation, everybody's on board on it. They are not the one just to use it. They are the one that actually part of the designer. So that's what I would think about it.
Okay. Thanks very much, Francis. Really interesting points there. Just before I'm going to come to at least one of the questions in the chat shortly, but I want to give Jan a chance to respond to that issue of convincing, persuading, bringing people along in relation to the value of implementation.
Yeah, thank you, Vivian. I think it's. I think everything starts with what do we want to implement, and I think the kind of input that we want to implement dictates the kind of strategy that we should employ. In my case, for example, when I heard the question first time, I was immediately thinking about core correctional skills and how we implement the training, how we make sure that the skills are actually transferred into the kind of frontline and real world situations. And thinking about that, I realized that I have three strategies that I use. The first strategy is to appeal to the meta analysis and the research showing how important implementation is. And I have some favorite, very important meta analysis, the Fixon one from 2005, I think, and others are very, very convincing, showing how important it is to take a kind of strategic approach into the implementation of a new skill. So that would be the first strategy, using science and meta-analysis and systematic reviews, showing results, discussing about the 10% problem, and so on. That would be the first one. The second strategy I think I use is using examples. I use quite a lot of examples, explaining and also demonstrating that knowing about something is not exactly the same thing with doing that particular thing. And we know from training that a lot of people think they know a lot about, let's say, pro-social modeling or motivation interviewing, but when it comes to implementing it into practice, they see it's a totally different kind of reality. So knowing about something is not the same thing as doing that particular thing. Giving that example usually helps a lot. And also giving examples of programs that were very successful in the testing, in the piloting stage, and after rollout proved to be quite not so successful, to put it like that, or with quite ambivalent outcomes. Of course, I'm talking about the most famous example, the reasoning and rehabilitation program that we all know what happened at the beginning of its implementation. So using these examples, I make them wonder and I make them understand why paying attention to the implementation is really, really important in terms of transferring the practice into reality, but also about fidelity and the risk of drifting. And if nothing works, then I use the kitchen metaphor. Do you know this kitchen metaphor? Yeah, no. The kitchen metaphor is about, it's explaining again that the recipe is not the meal. Trying to explain that if you know what you have to do, it's not exactly like doing it. You really need to start using that recipe. And then when you do that, you realize that it's important what kind of equipment you have in the kitchen, if the chef is exhausted or not, if the ingredients are of the good quality and so on. And that's why in many, many cases, the same recipe can produce actually different meals. And the kind of implementation science is teaching us how we can make sure that the meals that we produce are pretty close to each other, and they aim towards the same kind of taste and calories and so on. So, and usually these kind of metaphors and examples, they can work. They work quite well in the training environment, and hopefully it can work also in the program development or policy implementation. But this is how I do it. I'm very happy to learn so much from the others. Thank you.
That's excellent, Jan. I love the kitchen metaphor. It really brings the whole issue in so many ways to life. I'm going to come to a question that's been raised in the chat by Simon. Just as I do that, one of the points that has struck me from numerous contributions so far that people have made is that how different the implementation that we're talking about is to other types of implementation, that it's not about a launch, it's not about a go live announcement and everything falling into place. And I suppose that's raising in my mind a question about, have we been too influenced in how we work by ICT type initiatives that do operate in a very technical way and have a launch and a go live and a testing and so on. And that whole area of traditional project management. And I'm wondering, have we been too influenced by that approach in terms of the implementation we're talking about? And the question that Simon asks is, he asks, you know, what outcome are we talking about implementation towards? Is implementation about technical employment, about adoption by staff? Is that what implementation is? Or does it mean integration into practice, measurable improvements, sustainability, or some or all of the above? And you've mentioned the next bit, Jan, already, that we do need to define clearly enough what successful implementation looks like. Maybe we do that in the recipe metaphor. You know, we often get a recipe with a photograph of a dish that's to be produced, so we have some idea of what we're trying to arrive at. Anyway, Simon's question is, how should organizations define implementation in a way that goes beyond go live and launch and better reflects actual uptake, behavioral change, and outcome realization? So that's a big question in a way. I'll open that to people on the panel in general. Does anybody want to jump in on that? Don't be shy.
I can jump in and lean on a framework, which will maybe going to be a predictable answer. I mean, so this is where I feel like it's the answer is like, yes, yes. And I'm not sure it's super helpful to just have a measure of it's implemented, right? Cause I don't think that really exists, right? Because that implementation is so multifaceted. You can think about, you know, frameworks that I often use would be, the Enola Proctor. This is a very, very academic sounding, but basically there's a number of different implementation outcomes. And one of those might be adoption or sustainability or acceptability. And I think all of these are really, really important. And I think that's what makes it a lot more dynamic when you think about it. So something like acceptability as an implementation outcome basically means, like, do people like the thing, right? Do they think it's acceptable? Is there satisfaction or appropriateness, which is this the right fit for this thing? And when I say thing, I mean intervention, whatever you want to call it. Is this thing the right fit for the agency for right now? When you think about adoption, you know, for me, that might be, you know, does the probation agency adopt mental health supervision as a practice, which is not the same thing as something like reach or penetration as an implementation outcome, which is, are the officers doing the thing, right? And so I think you have to think about all of these pieces. And of course, as a researcher, and I think as any data-driven person, you're going to want to try to put some kind of number on that, whether that's getting some, you know, narrative qualitative feedback from people about what they think about this, right? That's acceptability and appropriateness or fit. Or if you're actually measuring, you know, utilization in a case management data system like we do in Georgia, like we do in North Carolina. And so I think my answer to that is the yes, and you need to look at this from a, you know, kind of multiple levels, but also just kind of disaggregating implementation in a way, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah, really important. Anybody else want to come in on that issue? The question of how organizations define what comprises implementation.
I think I have one add-on thoughts about this. Mm-hmm. If I may, I think there are two big categories that might be helpful to think along. One, I think Simon actually kind of mentioned that already. Depending on what is being implemented, I think you want to think about the effectiveness side of it. So if the tool or whatever program that you want to implement is supposed to reach a particular kind of effect, reduce recidivism, improve whatever, then you have to find a way to measure that effectiveness so that you can convey to the people who are implemented. Does it actually get to there, or are we get on track to achieve that? I think the second bigger category will be similar to what Tanya already been talking about. It's more so about the adoption and about basically the implementation outcome of it. But I do think that we also want to keep in sight about the effectiveness of whatever implementation we are trying to do. That might help ground the process as well, so that you know that it's not just, there's a chance that they might all like it, but it doesn't really do anything. So I think we want to have both and balance both at the same time. Yeah, that's some of my thoughts on that. And I think Simon actually already mentioned that in his post.
Yes,
which is very comprehensive.
It is. And Joseph Arvidsson has also made a similar comment to that last point you were making, Francis, about the whole issue of recidivism or revocation rates, data sharing, data-driven feedback. How important is that in terms of measuring, if I'm paraphrasing Joe correctly, in terms of measuring ultimate implementation? I'll just let you have a think about Joseph's question, and I'll let Jan come in because he has his hand up as well at the moment.
Yes, just thinking out loud on this question, I think it's a very important question. And I think especially in the criminal justice sector, we are quite tired of having this kind of top-down decision-making or policy imposition. And I think it's a very good time to challenge that and find a way to encourage also bottom-up approaches to this kind of changes. And in this respect, I do think that a very good way of encouraging or promoting implementation is by talking to staff and understand the problem very well, and then develop the solutions together with the staff. And then I think once we develop acceptability and ownership, I think implementation would go faster and easier within the organization. And in this respect, I think if we also look at the design thinking approach with the first stage, which is empathizing, I think it's when we really understand the problem that we try to solve with a training or with a policy or with a new tool or whatever, I think it's a very good kind of starting point for any kind of implementation to understand the problem and then to design, to develop the solutions together with those involved. And therefore, implementation, I think, will go more spontaneously, let's say. That doesn't exclude the kind of strategic and structured approach, of course. But I think the dynamic would be different.
Okay, you're reminding me, Jan, of a phrase that I think I first heard from you, but I'm not sure if you're the inventor of the phrase, which is about practice-based evidence as well as evidence-based practice, which I always found really interesting to contemplate. And as far as I recall, it was you that I first heard using that phrase a number of years ago. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about, the issue of practice being informed by the evidence, but that need to engage with staff and to learn from what their direct experience is in implementing whatever we're asking them to do?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's my phrase, but...
Is it not?
I don't think so. But anyway, it sounds really good. I like it. I agree with you. But I do think that the more that we understand the organizations, I think especially the coercive organizations that we belong to or we work with, I think the more we understand how important the kind of buy-in and the staff engagement is. It's incredible. There are so many ways for staff to resist or to avoid implementing new policies or new strategies or new tools. You cannot imagine. There are a lot of studies, especially in England and Wales. I remember reading some of them and being surprised at how creative staff can be. So that's why I really think that if you really want to create a good organizational culture, you really need to start bottom up as well. Maybe you can have some top down ideas and so on, but bottom up, I think it's a more sustainable and more solid approach to implementation.
Okay. And just going back to Joe's question, how would other panel members feel about that question about recidivism or revocation rates in the context of measuring implementation? You know, while it may well be, as Tanya and Francis have said, important to measure acceptability and, implementation, reach, penetration, and so on. But how important down the line is it? Should we be thinking about implementation, part of the component of implementation being to see what impact is the implementation having on recidivism or revocation rates? And Joe does raise the question that not necessarily all organizations would gather that information. Without laboring the point, but others may want to come in on that from the panel. Nick, are you looking like you're formulating, or anyone else? Maybe not.
I'll just maybe come in. I'll just turn off my video. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you very well now, Lena. Yeah.
Yeah, perfect. So just, I think in terms of us measuring our framework against recidivism, we're not there yet. So I think it's about looking at what does success mean at different points of the implementation process, if you like. But I think in terms of the importance of it, it's vitally important, because I suppose that's the why of why we're doing it, isn't it? It's to try and improve outcomes. But I think, I suppose, in terms of looking at how successful implementation is, it's looking at how do you define success at different points of the implementation. So, so I think it's about thinking of it in kind of the short term, medium term, and long term, in terms of what success looks like, I suppose.
Okay.
Oh, Vivian. Yeah. Could I come here? Sorry. And I think what I was kind of trying to going back and forth to my practitioner, my academic brain. I think Lena makes a good point in the sense of we have to track outcomes, because ultimately that's what the public wants to hear about. It's not something that can be ignored. But when it comes to managing the day-to-day work, when it comes with implementation, I think in the past, we roll something out and we hold our breath, hope it does well. And then we look at this lagging effect of recidivism. That's right. That's right. But, I think the best way I've ever heard it put is, it's much more like growing a plant. There's not much you can do to the plant, but, you can, work the soil. You can make sure it has sunlight, water, and all that. That's the implementation outcomes that we should be focusing with. And if you'll indulge me, I'll share a quick story with you. One time, Commissioner Nail, who chaired our panel, me and him were presenting some data to a board for our organization. And one of the things that we presented was a 68% employment rate. And I stood there with the commissioner while he got peppered with questions about the, 32% unemployment rate. And I even tried to jump in, Vivian, and explain, statistically speaking, it's harder for, a person with a felony conviction to get a job than it was for someone during the Great Depression in the United States to get a job, right? That's, biggest economic downfall, that we dealt with. But yet, but that just kept going. So I asked myself, what would the commissioner should have been able to answer? And if we've got good programs, if we're addressing needs, we're applying these evidence-based initiatives, and the commissioner should have confidently been able to stand there and say, I can't speak to the labor market, so we can't give people jobs, right? But what I can tell you is that of the people who have an employment need, my officers are helping them X percentage of the time. So I think when, like Lena was saying, it was about defining success during the implementation process and kind of just trusting that if we're doing the right things and we're hitting implementation success, then the outcomes will follow. And I think that's easy to say in a controlled simulation like this, but it's really hard to do in practice.
Yeah, and if I can just develop that point then, Nick, and this comes back to yet another question from Joe, which I was going to raise anyway, about the whole issue of coaching. You mentioned it earlier on, maybe not by name, Nick, but you did refer, and I think others have referred, to the need, certainly Francis did, and I think others, supporting staff on an ongoing basis. But I think what I'm coming at is more than just dipping into how staff are getting on or offering them arm's length kind of support. A lot of people nowadays in our fields of work would say that there's a really strong need for more active coaching. You use the phrase, Nick, about helping the, this may not be the wording you use, but helping the staff before you even think about helping those people under our supervision. Do you know the point I'm saying? So part of that, I think, needs to be very direct coaching. It's like going back to Jan's metaphor about the kitchen. You know, when we're teaching, or when people are being taught how to cook, certainly in an educational context, the teacher is there with them. You know, they show them the technique. They let them practice the technique themselves. Then they let them, you know, do it themselves and so on. But coaching is more than just giving them the manual, more than just checking in every now and again. And I'm wondering, how important is that? And do we pay enough attention to that coaching aspect of the staff at a more in-depth level? Lena, you might be already doing that or have been doing it in the Irish context or not, or other people may be too.
I suppose one of the things that, sorry, I'll just turn off this in case. One of the things that we have implemented as part of the framework is communities of practice. And they happen quite regularly where we're bringing staff, I suppose, back after they've done the training. And that there's a couple of functions to that. You know, the first is trying to, I suppose, reinforce some of the messages, that the training delivered, I suppose, and then also allowing space for reflective practice and also to hear feedback. So I think a number of people have spoken about that, about the importance of that kind of approach, ongoing kind of collaboration and having those feedback loops. And I suppose the grassroots approach, because one of the things that we've learned, I suppose, through the communities of practice is, you know, that helps to foster innovation as well. And that staff sometimes have the solutions, you know, that can help with implementation. So by hearing, you know, from staff about what's working on the ground in practice or what the barriers are can be really useful, you know, to help you kind of, I suppose, develop as you scale up through the process of implementation, to kind of develop or adapt as you go along. So I think, you know, bringing staff and together, you know, and you know, that coaching element, I suppose, a community of practice is more that peer learning as well. So that they're learning from each other about what's working or and getting support from each other if there's barriers. And we also had a coaching style training program for managers as well. So again, that's something that we would have learned through, I suppose, the implementation science approach. When you're, I suppose, implementing any kind of significant organizational change, is looking at what the learning needs are of all of the service and the different grades within the service as well. So so that's been really important, I suppose, as well for us to take on board, you know.
Okay, thanks very much for that, Lena. Martine Evans has raised a couple of questions which are kind of connected, I would suggest. They're in a similar vein to what we've just been discussing. And Martine says that what we ask staff, officers to implement must be seen by them to be valuable in terms of what it's offering them. And similarly, she says, or in a similar vein, she uses Jan's metaphor of the recipe and saying that sometimes at an organizational level, and this kind of adds on to what you've just said, Lena, it's useful to start with pilot or trial areas, and success that is perceived there can lead to a hunger for change in other areas. So to what extent have you seen, or do you think that it is really important to demonstrate to staff who are being asked to implement that this is not just an additional add-on kind of role or task that you're asking, that it is going to add value to what they do. That's one aspect of the question. And then the other is the whole aspect of pilot sites or trial areas versus the idea of going for organization-wide implementation. Anybody want to take up either or both of those?
I'd like to jump in on this one too, because I think it also ties back to the conversation around implementation outcomes. Because when we're talking about that hunger piece or that value to the person, we'll talk about, you know, the officer. Does the officer think this is a good idea? Do they think it's going to help them and benefit them? Which goes back to those ideas of acceptability and appropriateness and fit, right? And so an example, you know, Nick has been mentioning kind of this or alluding to this pilot that we're doing in Georgia around clinical case consultation, which is that coaching for the officers, mental health officers. And we are in, and I won't spill the beans, Nick, but we're in the middle of the analysis. And really it is high satisfaction from the officers. What they're saying is, we need this to be able to do this really hard job. Like, we're working with people who, you know, have active hallucinations in our office, and we need to kind of get coaching. And the coach is a mental health clinician. This particular coach is not a probation officer. She hasn't been a probation officer to my knowledge, but she's a seasoned mental health clinician who's there to help the officers work through what they're seeing and to process challenges that they're having personally. So they get a little bit of personal consultation, case-specific consultation, and they love it. And so, and speaking of pilots, I mean, that the piece of that is what Georgia chose to do is pilot test this in specific circuits and not go statewide, which I think is really wise. And what they're finding and what we're finding, when we haven't told them just yet, Nick, but it's highly acceptable, very feasible, because they've figured out a way to fit it within the context of their current workload. So for them, and what they tell us is, it doesn't feel like an extra thing. It feels like you have to go to an extra meeting or two, but it doesn't feel extra to them because they're getting a benefit from this. So I do think that's really important. And again, tying that to implementation outcomes. The other thing I wanted to comment on just very briefly too, to Joe's question about recidivism, you know, and when I think about, you know, I keep referring to implementation outcomes, I see implementation outcomes and effectiveness outcomes as separate. So when you're talking about recidivism, if you're trying to impact recidivism, then yeah, absolutely, you need to measure recidivism. But sometimes that's not necessarily the point of the intervention. Most of them are, for sure. But what we tend to do and try to do is link those implementation outcomes statistically to those effectiveness outcomes to see if there's an association. I do think that's important, again, only if that was the purpose of the intervention in the first place.
Okay, really important point, Tanya. Jan, you have your hand up.
Yeah, commenting on the same questions coming from Joe and Martina's, always very good questions from both of them. Hi, Joe. Hi, Martin. I think it's a very good point to discuss about implementation outcomes. And it's like, if we look at the implementation like a journey and not like a process and not like an event or something like that, that I think we need to discuss about the destination, the outcomes, what we want to achieve. And in this respect, the discussion about defining success, I think it's very, very important. And this is a big discussion we don't want to go into today, I guess. But what I think it's also important is to discuss about the process and about the journey itself, about how to get from one point to another. What are the kind of intermediate points that you need to check before you go to the final outcome? And in this respect, I think we need to talk not only about evaluation, but also about monitoring. What kind of data we need to collect, when, who, and so on. And I think this is a very, very important point. When we look at the implementation, we really need to set up a system whereby we collect this data in a kind of strategic and a routine way, in order to have enough data, not only about the outputs, the outcomes, but also about the intermediate points on the way. I think that's an important topic in this respect. Thank you.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, Jan. Okay. Anybody else want to come in on that, or I'll move on to another question? No? Okay. There's another really interesting question, and I was going to raise it myself, but Martina has beaten me to it. So she makes the point that we need to listen to and value what resistant members of staff have to say, and also raises the issue about organizational or institutional goals and accusations of managerialism, which is often used in a pejorative way of terminology, or Martina says Mac justice, Mac probation, or what I've heard it called McDonaldization, which I think has got a very bad name. And on the other hand, if the goal is to ensure that people are entitled to and get a similar level of good service, it's arguable whether or to what extent that may be a bad thing. So Martina finishes then with asking the question about being able to distinguish evidence-based practices and science on the one hand, and on the other hand, institutional or organizational implementation, which may have other agendas or agendae at play. It's a kind of a complicated question, but I think a very real one, and something that certainly leaders within the criminal justice system often face when trying to implement an organizational wide change or development. To what extent are staff being imposed with managerialist strictures? Anybody want to come in on that? I think it'd be really interesting to hear panelists' views. Nick, would you like to, given that you're in a very senior leadership position in a very large state and organization, and that whole idea of what we're trying to do and implement evidence-based practice, and to what extent that can be seen rightly or wrongly as imposing managerialist structures and strictures on staff, and how you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and thanks, Vivian, I think the biggest way to deal with that is to keep the human in human service. So you got to remember, I mean, people doing this community supervision work are doing it because they want to help others. They want to serve their communities. And that's evident in our mission, why we exist. So I think for a leadership team, when you're trying to roll out an evidence-based initiative, it can't be to be innovative for the sake of innovation. It can't be to lead the charge, to build your reputation. It ultimately needs to come back to that mission, why we exist, serving the communities, creating opportunities for positive outcomes, breaking cycles of violence. So I think for leaders to be effective on this stuff, they have to remain mission-minded and vision-focused, so that we're not just talking about evidence-based initiatives as a separate thing. We're talking about them, you know, as a integral part of us carrying out our mission and tying back to the call to service that we answered.
Great points. Thanks, Nick. Jan, you want to come in?
Yeah, if nobody else would, I would comment on this. I think we are talking about the implementation science as if it's a kind of monolithic concept, but it's not. It's just a set of principles and ideas, basically. So we really need to take it as it is and apply it according to the context. I think there is some sort of organizational responsivity we also need to pay attention to. We are talking about responsivity when we are talking individual clients, but I think we should take this concept at the higher level, at the organizational level as well, and look at the organizations as individual entities. They are not the same, and therefore we need to adapt our approaches when thinking about implementation according to the kind of, you know, the type of leadership, the type of the type of staff, the kind of resistance that you have in the service, the kind of resources that you find, and so on. I think it's we definitely need to find a kind of bespoke type of implementation based on the good principles coming from science, of course.
Okay, thanks very much, Jan. And maybe what you've just said leads me into the one of the closing questions that I have really is looking forward. What do panelists think is the future for implementation science in the criminal justice area, and particularly in your area of work and your organization? I think at some level, there's often a danger of, you know, things being seen as, you know, just the latest fad or fashion, and things will change in the future. And that's also connected with what's come up throughout our three events about the length of time that it takes to implement significant change in terms of introducing or implementing evidence-based practice. So, you know, given that it takes a long time to achieve real change, and there is always that concern, I guess, in the background that people will feel, oh, you know, it'll be something else next year. What do you think is the future for implementation science in criminal justice, and specifically in probation, parole, and corrections more widely? Anybody want to jump in there? Francis, I might start with you this time. What is the future?
To me, I feel like it really heavily rests on the leadership of the organization. Because I think it is a kind of mindset, how much they open up, not just to researcher, it's also open up to listening to all the bottom-up voices. So I do believe the leadership play a very big role in basically continuing the implementation science, the success of it, and also the change of the culture. Because I think researchers are always doing what they want to do because we're passionate about research. It's more so about this partnership, the research practice partnership, how well it can go, really, in my opinion, or in my experience, I feel like it rests on the organization and the leadership level. So that it will kind of produce the kind of opportunity that we can continue to grow.
Okay, thanks for that, Francis. Tanya? The future of implementation science in criminal justice.
Yeah. So,
is it here to stay?
Yeah, it is. And it's going to grow. So I think a while back, I did this systematic review to see how much implementation science methods were used in correctional health interventions. And not a lot, though, and mostly clustered around certain, mostly prison work and jails and stuff, but a lot less on community supervision. So I do think it's grown a ton since then. What I don't know if this is the future, but what I hope the future is that there is actually a greater focus on entities in criminal justice system being able to understand what the actual ingredients of the intervention is, or the recipe, however you want to talk about it. But I think that that becomes one of the biggest barriers, is we're going to say we're going to do this thing, but no one quite understands what it looks like, except maybe the people who are later then tasked with doing it, and they come back and they're like, I don't know what you want me to do. So being able to kind of focus in on specification of what those components are of the intervention, the program, the thing, and then I would say that's one, and then really identifying what are those specific changes in behaviors, because we're usually talking about officer behavior change that need to happen, and then what's going to get in the way of those behavior changes, right? So we could talk about all sorts of things. And so I think zeroing in on those pieces, I think is where we need to go a bit further, because I do see a lot of, again, lack of specification of what you're supposed to do, what this thing is supposed to look like, you know, training interventions, whatever the intervention might be. I think that that's a big limitation that I'm hoping in the future gets addressed.
Okay, thanks very much, Tanya. Lena, Have you any thoughts on what's the future?
I think, you know, from our perspective anyway, in learning and development, like, and within the probation service in Ireland, we've learned so much from implementation science through our whole process, I suppose, of implementing the Irish probation framework. And I think it just gives a lot of, I suppose, advice over how to implement something in an effective way. And I think you mentioned it there, Vivian. I suppose one of the things is the time it takes. And I suppose it's really important then as an organization to be able to invest that time in and in our staff as well and in the leaders of the organization, because, you know, ultimately practitioners are the ones that are going to be implementing the change. So linked to that then is that constant collaboration, constant consultation with people on the ground that are implementing the change, so that, you know, you can support and hear where the barriers or where the blockages might be. And you know, ultimately we hope that will kind of improve, I suppose, implementation and I suppose prevent it becoming the new shiny thing, that it is something that in time becomes part of your and parcel and ingrained in practice. So I think implementation science has really helped us to understand that and understand how that comes about, I suppose. So yeah, a lot to learn from it, and I think, like the others have said, it is here to stay, really, in terms of kind of change and, you know, change management and all of that. So yeah.
Okay, thanks very much, Lena. Jan, you look like you're itching to get saying something.
Always. I'm a native optimistic in this respect. I think implementation is more and more present in our implementation science. I mean, in our field, I see more and more articles published on this topic, one way or another. I see more and more debates like the one that we have today, and that's a very good demonstration of how important the topic is. And increasingly, I see it also mentioned in different policy documents. Maybe not as such, like implementation science, but I see some of the principles reflected in documents like the latest Kyoto Declaration of UNODC. They mention quite often the importance of starting small, having pilot projects, learning from them, expanding step by step, and so on. And I think this kind of approaches are inspired by the implementation science, and probably sooner rather than later we will have this approach even more mentioned into the policy, cross-national, pan-national, let's say, policy documents that will even more enhance the use of this science.
Okay, thanks, John. I see Steve Pitts has added a comment as well in the context of the current discussion, using the recipe and the cooking metaphor. And it's a very well-made point about the fact that, you know, sometimes people, when they're cooking, chefs or whoever, end up making things that are really phenomenally good by not necessarily sticking to the recipe as they were given it. And I guess that adds to the whole discussion about bottom-up approaches to things. Nick, what about you? What's your take on the future of implementation science in criminal justice? Is it here to stay? Will it develop? Is there a danger of it being seen at some stage as just a fad and we'll move on to the next bright and shiny thing?
I think it's here to stay. I'm actually pretty confident about that. And I like Ian's point about it not being a monolithic concept, because I think the more and more it's a practice, right? And it's really a mindset of how we approach the work. So I think the implementation science, you know, gives us some common language and all that, but really it kind of shifts our focus on the entire implementation process. And I think that what this will have, you know, it may no longer be a buzzword or whatever, as these things tend to evolve, words change, but the principles and concepts behind it, I think you're going to get integrated in our field to make it for the better moving forward.
Okay, thanks very much for that. I see Jerry McNally has made the point about recognizing the role of organizational and community culture, enabling the exercise of discretion, and flexible, purposeful relationships are important in the best use of implementation science. And going back to that point that's just been made a couple of minutes ago about being human in every sense of the word and supporting change. We're just coming to the towards the end of our time. So I have one final question, and I do want to thank everybody, all of our participants who have made comments or asked questions in the chat. And it's been really useful and helpful. And one question, part of what I want to ask is, we didn't get into discussing it too much today, but I'm just wondering how we can use implementation science in the context that we've been discussing it in our communications with our external stakeholders, because they're such an important group in terms of how we communicate, what we do and why we do it, and establishing and building our organizational legitimacy and so on. So if anybody has any thoughts on that, as I ask this final question for our panel, which is, what will you be taking away from these webinars and this event today and the discussion on implementation in criminal justice as key learning? So if you're meeting somebody next week or tomorrow or whenever, or even just pondering the issues we've been discussing, what would you identify as a key takeaway in terms of learning and then hopefully taking it out into your organizations and workplaces? And as I'm giving the panelists an opportunity to answer that, I would encourage all of our participants, maybe it might be useful to have a think for yourselves. What do you think will be the key takeaways in terms of learning? So if I could ask the panelists to summarize their thoughts on that in terms of key learning, key takeaways from today's and the previous day's discussion. I might start with you, Jan. You're on mute.
Yes, sorry. I just realized. Sorry. I was just thinking about your question, and immediately this book came to my mind. Is The Missing Story. It's a fantastic book. Can you see?
It's great. Yeah, I just have been reading it recently. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fantastic book that actually helps us a lot to communicate with other stakeholders. And I see Steve here, and I know Joe also was very much involved in discussing about this book. So I would strongly encourage you to have a look at this book, because it's really telling the story about how we can better communicate with external stakeholders. I think it gives us a lot of examples and ideas also based on the implementation science that we just discussed. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Jan. Tanya, key learnings, key takeaways that you would have for yourself or that you would encourage other people to consider?
That's a really big question. I think, my key takeaway is we need to talk to each other more. I think that having these kinds of discussions, I think what it brings up for me is, you know, I'm a big like context person. Like, context is different everywhere, but this conversation is the same when we're talking about, you know, the different sessions of the webinars and what we're talking about here. We come from different places and we're having very similar conversations. So all the more reason to collaborate and to have these conversations. I think the more, you know, people talking about integration of implementation science within real world public institutions, for example, and not just living in academia is really, really important. And making all of these methods and these tools practical. And I think that comes from just having very, very frank and real world discussions about the use of these methods within these spaces. So I think that's the main thing that's just bubbling up for me as we're closing out.
Okay, thanks very much, Tanya. Excellent. Francis?
Yeah, sure. I think my biggest takeaway is speak direct and simple words. So I think it's along the same line that the other two panelists have been talking about, just communication. And I really like what Tanya has said previously about when we're implementing things, we have to spell out what it is. Like those need to be in plain language that everybody can understand, because the more that you try to dress it up, the more you try to make it fancy. To me, I feel like that's actually counterproductive. So to me, I think the biggest takeaway is just plain, direct, simple communication, so that you make your point across.
Thank you so much, Francis. And Nick? Key takeaways, learnings? Your mic is switched off at the minute, Nick, I think.
Sorry, I guarantee you what I said was profound, if you want to just wrap there.
I've no doubt.
Yeah, no, I think my biggest takeaway is I think the more we do this, the better we'll get at simplifying it. And I think across the group, that's what I'm hearing. Like, I really love what Tanya just said about, you know, the context may be different everywhere. And implementation science teaches us to kind of put that into our brain, right? But the conversations are the same. We just got to think about like the how is going to change and make sure we're making those adaptations. So that's the key takeaway for me, is to keep working on this and not thinking implementation science is something that you either know or you don't, but just constantly pursuing it and getting a little bit better at it and making it more digestible and getting these principles like embedded in our service delivery model.
Excellent. Thanks very much, Nick. I'm not sure if Lena is still there. You may be, Lena, but your camera might be off. I can't see you at the minute. Lena, no? We might have lost connection with Lena. Okay, they've been some really great points, and I want to draw things to a close. We're just coming up towards our 90-minute mark. And we started out at the start of this series and at the start of today by posing what I said was a deceptively simple question. How do we move from knowing what works to actually making it work in practice? And I have various notes made from points people made, which have been excellent throughout the discussion today. I think maybe I'm a particularly visual kind of person. I really like the whole kitchen recipe all that goes with that metaphor. But if I can really zone in on some of the final few points there about the future of implementation. And from my point of view, I started working in probation, well over 30 years ago. I know, for example, a former colleague, Jerry McNally, who's on the call today, started over 40 years ago in probation. And I think going back to a point that I think Nick, hopefully I'm quoting correctly, I think it was Nick who said it at one point today, that really, you know, in terms of keeping the human in human services, we always are, and we always have been for decades in our work, wherever that has been, about trying to do our best and trying to implement what we knew in terms of evidence-based practice in how we did our work each day. I think a big change that has come about in recent years has been the application of the implementation science lens, which is much more focused. It's much more scientific, I guess. While the how, as Nick said, may change, what we're trying to do and how we do it or why we do it, it hasn't really changed. So that would also give me great optimism for the future, that we're on a very, very long term journey, of which what we're talking about today is one phase in that. And finally, I would just finish by going back to one of the final points that Tanya made, which was about the need to and the value of talking to each other. Over the three events, including today, it's been so obvious there are so many similarities and there are so many differences, but we learn so much from both the similarities that we share and the differences that we can identify. So I really just want to say a huge thank you in closing off to everybody who's attended today, everybody who has listened and posed questions or comments. In particular, I want to mention Jan, Nick, Francis, Tanya and Lena for their invaluable contributions both today and in earlier iterations of this series. And finally, I want to thank John Scott and all his and my colleagues in the International Network for Criminal Justice. And finally, to Rob Watson, who is there in the background. You can't see him, but he's the person who is making all of this happen from a technical point of view, and who, after we've gone off this evening, will be the person putting together the summary and the other iterations of this event to go on the INCJ website. So I want to wish you all a very good rest of the day, whatever time it is, and wherever you are, and to say a big thanks again and draw the event to a close. So thank you all very much, and I hope to see you all again soon in future. Thanks.
You have been listening to the INCJ podcast, conversations about international criminal justice. To find out more, go to our website at criminaljusticenetwork.net or follow us on Twitter at INTCJ Network.